Matthew 24, and we left off last time at verse 22. Remember, on our diagram, we're looking at this little slot of time here that's called the tribulation period, or the 70th week of Daniel. And we looked at the overview last time and some of the details. And now we're going to continue with the second advent of Messiah. And that'll be in verses 23 through 31. First, let's read down to verse 28. Starting at verse 23, it says, "Then if anyone says to you, 'Behold, here is Christ,' or 'Here he is,' do not believe him. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and will show great signs and wonders, so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. Behold, I have told you in advance. So if they say to you, 'Behold, he is in the wilderness,' do not go out. Or, 'Behold, he is in the inner rooms,' do not believe them. For just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather." Okay, so Jesus is pronouncing his second coming, and that second coming will terminate this period of time that we call the tribulation, and it's on your notes down at the bottom. The second advent of Messiah will terminate the tribulation period. You have that in verse 29. It says, "But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened," and so on and so forth. Down to verse 30, it says, "They will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of the sky with power and great glory." So his second advent actually terminates the tribulation period. First, though, he warns about false prophets and false messiahs. Reading back up in verse 23, it says, "If anyone says to you, 'Behold, here is the Christ,' or 'Here he is,' do not believe him. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and will show great signs as wonders, so as even to mislead, if possible, even the elect." And we'll talk about who the elect are in a bit. But the false messiahs are demonically inspired to the point where they are able to perform deceiving signs and wonders. So Jesus is telling the people who are going to be in that tribulation period to be careful. Now keep in mind, the church will not go through the tribulation. The church is taken at the rapture of the church just preceding tribulation. And we saw that before in 1 Thessalonians 4, 13 through 18. And that's on your chart too. That's the beginning of the tribulation. Actually, that's not the beginning of the tribulation. The beginning of the tribulation is the signing of the agreement with the Antichrist, with Israel, to promise to protect them for 7 years, which he will break in the middle. They're able to perform signs and wonders, and that's why it's necessary for the king to describe what his coming will not be like. He says, if anyone says, "Behold, here is the Christ," or "Here he is," don't believe him. What he's saying is that his second coming will not be so obscure that it has to be pointed out. He's saying nobody's going to have to come and tell you, "Hey, the Christ is here. Look at him." Because everyone on earth will see the sign of the Son of Man and will know. He illustrates that with a bolt of lightning in verse 27. "For just as lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be." And that's an illustration of the greatness of his second coming. It will be so evident that everyone will know. Then in verse 28, he says, wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. And that's kind of a tough verse. It seems kind of out of place there. What's he talking about exactly? And there's several interpretations of that verse. Two basic ones. First, if you take it figuratively, the corpse represents Israel, and the vultures represent the false prophets. Israel, lifeless, hopeless, starting to rot, only fit for carrion. The nation in such a spiritual condition that false prophets will be able to feast on it as vultures consume a dead and rotting corpse. Now, if you take it literally, it would refer to the Battle of Armageddon. That's when all the armies of the earth will be gathered together for destruction and become a feast for the birds of the air. And I take it generally, literally myself. No, I see no reason to make it figurative. Because in the end times, just before the coming of Christ, and this is gathers a lot of prophecy that we haven't studied yet, but all the armies of the earth are going to have a campaign, and it's going to end up in the Valley of Armageddon, and all the armies of the earth are going to be standing there ready to fight each other. And Christ returns, they all join forces and fight him. So that's the Battle of Armageddon, and of course he will destroy them. And the blood will run as high as your bridles. So that would be a feast for the birds of the air. Immediately after the tribulation, let's read on down now to verse 31. Verse 29 says, but immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. And the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. So immediately after the tribulation period, there will be signs in the heavenly bodies. The sun will be darkened. The moon will not give its light, which, of course, makes sense if the sun's darkened, because the moon's just a reflection of the sun's light. The moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from their places. And so much for the Big Bang Theory. Phrase powers of heavens in verse 29, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. That's just a reference to the sun, moon, and stars spoken of in a summary fashion, the powers of the heavens. So they will all be shaken. So the tribulation, the signs in stellar spaces, and the sign of the Son of Man are all marks of Christ's second coming. In verse 30, it says, and the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. So all of the people will see him coming on the clouds of the air. And all this marks Christ's coming again. There are sign after sign of Christ's second coming. As opposed to the rapture, there is no sign given for the rapture. It could happen any time. It could happen in the middle of this class. We could all be taken, or if you're not a believer, you can continue the class. The notes are up here. It has no signs. The Son of Man's coming, on the contrary, has many signs. What the sign of the Son of Man is not revealed, though. He says, you'll see the sign of the Son of Man in verse 30, and the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. And you know, it doesn't say what it is. Most expositors make a guess at it. to say what they think. Personally, I don't know, I have to admit. The text doesn't say, I don't know. But what I do know is everyone will recognize it. You can go by that. You don't have to wait for somebody to come and tell you, hey, Messiah's back. It's going to be so great of a sign that everyone on earth will know that the Son of Man isn't revealed. What I do know is that it will be recognized and all the tribes of the earth will mourn. Now in verse 31, we have the regathering of nation Israel, where it says, and he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. So verse 31 suggests that the event to follow the second advent is the regathering of nation Israel. And it's important to understand who the elect are here, because we use that term in the church age for believers. And while that's true here, it's not all that he's talking about. He's talking about the believers of nation Israel. Remember, the church is gone, so there won't be any elect from the church, only elect from nation Israel. The word elect, eklektos in the Greek, is used of Israel several times in the Old Testament. If you want to look it up, you can see it in 1 Chronicles 16, 13, Psalm 105, 6, and 43, Psalm 106, verse 5. Just that same word, eklektos, is used in the Septuagint for chosen ones. It's usually translated in the Old Testament. Chosen ones. You know what the Septuagint is? It's the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament. So we use it sometimes when we study to see how words were used in the Greek language, because it was written near the time of Jesus. So when we're looking at a word, for example, and we want to get a better picture of what it means, we sometimes look at the Old Testament in the Septuagint version. Now, it was not only used for nation Israel, but of the believers of nation Israel. Look at Isaiah 65. We'll look at an example of this one in Isaiah 65 in verse 9. Where it says, I will bring forth offspring from Jacob and an heir of my mountains from Judah. Even my chosen ones, and that's our word eklektos, shall inherit it, and my servants will dwell there. So he's saying that these are the ones who are going to dwell in the kingdom. And as you know, only believers will enter the kingdom. There will be sin in the kingdom. Don't misinterpret that. But only believers will enter the kingdom. But the sin nature is not gone yet. This is how Christ uses it here, for the believers in nation Israel. When he comes again, the believing remnant of Israel will be gathered from the corners of the earth to be placed in the land. This is prophesied clearly in the Old Testament. Look at Jeremiah chapter 16. Jeremiah 16, 14 and 15, where it says, therefore, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when it will no longer be said, as the Lord lives, who brought up the sons of Israel out of the land of Egypt. But as the Lord lives, who brought up the sons of Israel from the land of the north and from all the countries where he had banished them, for I will restore them to their own land, which I gave to their fathers. So that's a reference to believing Israel being restored to the land. Just in conclusion then to this section, it can be concluded that Christ will come in glory with his church. Colossians 3. Look at Colossians 3, where the church comes in. This is after the tribulation. Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians. Go eat popcorn. Easy way to remember those. So in Philippians, or Colossians, 3:4, it says, when Christ, who is our life, is revealed, then you will also be revealed with him in glory. So when at his second advent, the church will be with Christ in glory, and his angels will be there. We just looked at that. We'll look at Matthew 16. Kind of far back to remember. Matthew 16:27. It says, for the Son of Man is going to come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and will then repay every man according to his deeds. So at the second coming, he will have his angels with him. And those angels will go out and gather the elect of Israel and bring him to the land. Now we get to some illustrative parables here. They're not very difficult if we stop and think just a little bit about them. The first one is the parable of the fig tree in 32 to 41. Verse 32 says, now learn the parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and put forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near, right at the door. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone. For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like in the days of Noah. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they did not understand until the flood came and took them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then there will be two men in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one will be left. The interpretation of this parable is quite simple. The fulfillment of the signs given in the preceding verses that we just looked at will herald the coming of Messiah as certainly as the new shoots on the fig tree heralds the approach of summer. When the fig tree starts bearing leaves, it's close to summer. There's some difference about the word generation in verse 34 when it says, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. The Greek word for that is genea. And genea is a very broad term, which gives us the various interpretations. It's a very, very broad term. It means those exhibiting common characteristics or interests. And that's straight from Bauer, Arndt, and Gingrich. Lexicon. Some say that Jesus was talking about the people alive when he said it, and he was just wrong. Do you believe people study the Bible and they say, well, Jesus was wrong? Why do they bother? I don't understand. Some make the generation the contemporaries of Christ and make the fulfillment of the second coming at the destruction of the Temple of Jerusalem in 70 AD, which means we're in the Millennial Kingdom now, which would mean I'm really disappointed if this is the Millennial Kingdom. because the millennial kingdom is supposed to be a perfect environment for man. Others claim the Lord is saying that the signs are starting in his generation. In the context of the parable of the fig tree, this seems unlikely. Still others say the word generation refers to the Jewish people. And that's a quite a possible translation of the word. And he's saying the Jewish people will not pass away until these things are fulfilled. The Jewish people will exist during this time, and that's a reasonable translation. Probably the best, I think, is that the generation that saw the beginning of the signs will see the return of the Lord. He's talking about that generation, the generation that saw the signs. And he says they will not pass away until they see the Lord. And that goes along with the parable of the fig tree, because he's saying when you see the shoots, it's almost summer. So it's talking about rapidity and quickness. Either of the last two are reasonable interpretations. I take the last one myself to say that it's the generation that sees the signs won't pass away until the Lord returns. Now in verse 24-36 on, we have some exhortations to watchfulness. Look at 36 down to 41. It says, but of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven nor the Son, but the Father alone. For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah. Now we have to stop here and look at that verse 36. But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven nor the Son, but the Father alone. And he's just gotten done saying there are going to be all these signs preceding that day. How do you reconcile that two, those two together? Well, I think verse 36 is addressed to the people he's talking to. They won't know. They don't have anything to go by. Now, the people in the tribulation will have something to go by, and that's the abomination of desolation. They can count the days from there to the second coming of Christ if they know their prophecy at all. But the people Jesus is talking to now, he's saying, won't know. He won't prophesy that because he doesn't know, nor the Son, but the Father alone. For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah. For as in those days, before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they did not understand until the flood came and took them all away. So will the coming of the man be. Then there will be two men in the field. One will be taken, one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one will be left. Now, he uses the comparison to the days of Noah. And actually, if you wanted to spend the time, you could make a whole class on this comparison between the days of Noah and the second coming of Christ, because there are so many similarities. Few people knew that there was going to be a flood. Who knew? Enoch knew, Methuselah, Noah and his family, but the rest of the world was totally oblivious to it. And that's the way the Son of Man, the coming of the Son of Man is going to be. Most of the world is going to be oblivious to it. And here he says, like the days of Noah, people watching Noah build an ark could surmise that a flood was coming, although they had never seen a flood before. In fact, they'd never seen rain before. So it'd be kind of hard to guess what a boat was for. they would know that the flood would not come until the ark was completed. The second coming, unlike the rapture, which is no signs, has many signs that must be fulfilled before it takes place. Verse 36 is directed to the listeners. The people living in the tribulation can know when the Son of Man will return. People living in the tribulation can see the abomination of desolation and count the days 3.5 years later Christ will return. Like the days of Noah, the second coming will be a time of judgment on the earth. In fact, the earth will be reformed like it was in the flood. So the whole earth will be reshaped. Personally, I think this reshaping of the earth at the second coming of the Lord is putting it back in order for the millennial kingdom, because it's out of order now because of the flood, and God is going to take it and put it back in order at the second coming for the millennial kingdom. That's just an opinion. You can take it or leave it. So the geography of the earth will be changed. Now, it's interesting to note that the reference to the days of Noah in verse 37 through 39 that we just read does not emphasize the licentiousness of the people of Noah's day. It doesn't talk about them being evil, wicked, and so forth. Look at it. It says, for as in those days, in verse 38, before the flood, they were eating, oh, how terrible, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, what terrible, awful things. No, they were just carrying on with their normal lives. These are not evil things, just everyday life, unprepared for impending judgment. Now, like the days of Noah, the time of the second coming will be a period of judgment on earth, only God does it a different way this time. And that's where we get verse 40 and 41, when it says there will be two men in the field, one will be taken and one will be left. Who wants to be taken? We don't want to be taken in this one. That refers to taken to judgment. Because at the return of Christ, the unbelievers are taken in judgment. Now that, those verses have led many people to believe this is talking about the rapture, but it's just not. It's talking about the second advent. So we have the rapture, where believers are taken and unbelievers are left. And the second coming, when the unbelievers are taken and the believers are left. That brings us to the parable of the watchful householder in verse 43 and 44. In verse 43, it says, but be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what time of the night the thief was coming, he would have been on the alert and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. For this reason, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not think you will. And there again, most of the world is going to be completely oblivious to the signs of the coming of the Son of Man until the coming of the Son of Man sign, when he actually comes. They're going to be oblivious. This parable, in the parable, the head of the household is given information on when a thief is coming. And he compares that to the people who are oblivious to the second coming of the Lord with all the signs. He says, you guys are going to have tons of signs. Don't be oblivious. You know, if a guy knew, if a thief called a guy up and said, I'm going to come and rob your house tonight at midnight, he'd put a guard there. He'd call the police. He'd do something. That's what he's telling the people in the tribulation to do. Look for these signs that I've given you. The application intended here is that all who see the sign would have a warning of impending return of Christ. Having been warned, they would prepare themselves as the owner of the house prepared himself for the thief. How do you prepare yourself for the second coming? Believe. If they ignore the judgment and are not prepared, these are the unbelievers, they will be taken away to judgment at the return of Christ. Now in 45 to 51, we have the parable of the two servants. 45, who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household to give him their food at the proper time? Blessed is that slave whom the master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But if that evil slave says in his heart, my master is not coming for a long time, and begins to beat his fellow slaves and eat and drink with drunkards, the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, at an hour when he does not know, and will cut him to pieces and assign him to a place with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. The parable stresses the faithfulness on the part of the two witnesses, on the part of who witnesses the signs. Who's going to be faithful? The servant represents nation Israel, who will be God's stewards during the tribulation. And this parable illustrates two attitudes men will have at the end time with the relationship to the king's coming to earth to judge and to reign. One will be characterized by faithfulness and wisdom. The other will be characterized by wickedness. Faithfulness is that which comes from faith in Christ. Wickedness comes from non-belief. The reward for faithfulness will be had in the kingdom. So faithful witnesses will be rewarded in the kingdom. The reward for wickedness will be judgment. They will be kept from the kingdom and taken away in judgment. Just in summary now, in view of the signs given to Israel, the people are exhorted to be watchful, prepared, and faithful. The reason that the signs indicate the coming of the judge, the reason is that the signs indicating the coming of a judge who will separate the saved from the unsaved. And that's what the parables basically tell us. That Jesus is going to come. There are going to be a lot of signs before his coming. So watch out for the signs. When you see the signs, believe, prepare, and be faithful, and be watchful for the second coming. Now in 25, we get to the parables of end time events resumed, and we're not going to have time to go through those, so we'll leave them for next time. The parable of the virgins and the parable of the talents are kind of long, so we'll leave those for next time. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for its truthfulness and faithfulness. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to gather together as a church and study it and learn it. We pray that we study and learn accurately. In Christ's name, amen.